Well, during the previous year, this course was called Green's Functions and Integral Transforms. But because the majority of material I'm going to talk about will be about Green's Functions, then I decided to rename the course a little bit and call it simply Green's Function. Pay attention to the following. The name of the course is not Green Function, but Green's Function. So, meaning that when we're talking about those functions, we don't assume that there is something green, for example, like grass or just leaves. But those functions are indeed named after the famous British mathematician George Green. So I will try to pay respect to this person and write not green functions, but Green's functions. Albeit in the textbooks, you can find the word simply green functions. And anyway, what the course is going to be about. So these are the topics that I intend to cover during the first two lectures. So Green functions, Green's functions for differential equations and self-adjoint differential operators. This will be the case where I will be talking about one-dimensional operators and give you the prescription how to construct Green's functions in one dimension. Then Sturm-Liouville problem and boundary conditions. So the issue of boundary conditions is very important because those are essential, especially in one dimension, for the proper construction of Green's functions. And I will mention about eigenfunction expansion. Then during the second lecture, I will talk about Fourier transform and the properties of Fourier transform. I will briefly mention what other integral transforms exist and give you an example where the solution for the Green's function leads to the so-called causal Green's function. Basically, the function that is zero in the certain domain. Then, after that, I will talk about Green's functions for partial differential equations. So this material is very, very enormous. So there are very, very many things one can talk about when we encounter the partial differential equations, but I will be talking only about one aspect related to partial differential equations, namely how to construct Green's functions. So, because there are quite many ways you can solve the partial differential equations. So, as an example, I will talk about diffusion equations and heat kernel. Apparently, you saw on one of the problems during your tutorial, the heat kernel. So I will talk about more details here. Then I will mention how to construct Green's functions for Laplace and Poisson equations. Actually, for Poisson equations, the Laplace equation does not have the right-hand side. Then I will present you two more examples. So Maxwell's equations and retarded potential, basically how you can obtain the expressions for the scale and vector potentials when you have the system of moving charges. This is the physical example. And then at the very end, I will try to mention the propagators in quantum field theory. You will see this topic probably once again in the course of quantum field theory one. But we believe that it will be good if you encounter those propagators are already here, so in this course. So, okay, any questions? So if you have any questions, don't hesitate to interrupt me any moment and ask them. Okay, let's start. So let's consider some differential operator L. L that is one dimensional and acting on the space of square integrable functions. So apparently you saw this notation in one of the previous courses devoted to special functions. So
this is the notation for the set of square integrable functions. So integrable functions defined on the segment between A and B. So the most general form we can imagine here is as follows. L equal to P naught of x dn over dxn plus P1 of x dn minus 1 dx n minus 1 plus so forth plus P n of x. So these are P naught, P1, and Pn. They are functions of x, and we assume that they are nice functions without singularities, so that those functions are real. So our differential operator is real, but it contains the derivatives up to the nth order. So, and we wish to solve the equation L, a differential operator acting on some function y of x equal to f of x, where f of x, we assume that f of x is also a nice function, not singular, so it is also integrable. So because we deal with differential operator, this equation must be supplemented by the boundary condition. So we say that we wish to solve this equation with appropriate boundary conditions. The latter issue is important because if we don't have appropriate boundary conditions, then the solution either may not exist or may not be unique. So the boundary conditions must be appropriate. So they should allow for this solution. So the question is how to solve. Well, we can, of course, write the formal solution to this equation. Since L is an operator, we can invert this operator and call it L in power minus 1. And write that y equal to L in power minus 1, or the inverse operator, well, this is how we call this, acting on f, where this operator L minus 1 is represented by an integral kernel. So it will be acting on x, and the integral kernel is written in this way. So that L acting on x, acting on the x variables in this integral kernel, equal to the delta function, delta x minus xi. So then our solution can be written, can be written in the form. So if L acting on x is equal to this, then our solution can be written in the form y equal to y of x equal to integral between a and b gx comma xi f of xi dxi. So this is the formal solution to this differential equation. So to prove that this is a solution, we simply write L acting on y will be equal to, so L acting on g gives us delta function, delta of x minus psi f of psi dxi equal to f of x. This is all very nice. But then the question is how to find how to find g is a function of x and xi. And the whole course is devoted to, well, basically the whole course is devoted to answering this question, how to find g as a function of x and xi. Xi is a sum, a parameter belonging to the segment between a and b. So everything belongs to this segment. Any questions? So before we proceed, I will spend some time talking about a very important notion of self-adjoint differential operators. Okay. Self-adjoint differential operators. So suppose we have a differential operator L, for example, of the form written above, and real positive weight function W of X, also defined on the above mentioned segment. Suppose we have L and some function W of X, then we can define another operator L dagger such that for any so differentiable functions u of x and v of x, we have the relation w of x times u star L acting on V minus V L dagger acting on U star equal to D over DX of some function Q, that will be the function of U and V and their derivatives up to the nth order. And Q is bilinear in U and V and its derivatives. So in this case, this operator is called the operator adjoint to L. And this identity, I labeled it by star, is called Lagrange's identity. So this procedure of finding the adjoint operator is very general. And it looks like we can always find the adjoint operator because if we have differential operator, we can do the procedure of integrating both sides along this segment between A and B and applying the integration by part. So a joint operator can always be found. But we need something else. And in a minute, I will tell you what we really need. So, but first of all, why this operator is called adjoint? So it is called adjoint because one attempts to make analogy with the linear algebra. So if we imagine that we have Q and functions U and phi taken in such a way that once integrated between A and B, the right-hand side disappears, then we have the situation in which the integral of this part is equal to the integral of this part. So in other words, if Q is such that the limits, so if we integrate the right-hand side and plug the limits B and A, then if Q is such that this expression is equal to zero, then we can write that the integral between A and B of W U star L V dx equal to the integral between A and B W, so V L dagger acting on U prime dx. So this expression reminds the definition of the Hermitian operator in linear algebra. So that's why L dagger is called adjoint. So I wrote U star, but we typically deal with real differential operators, and there is no necessity for us to use the complex functions. It's just, well, in case you decide somehow to make the functions complex. So, and if we have this condition, and if L is equal to L dagger, then L is self-adjoint. So already here we see that this condition, that this function must disappear on the boundaries, tells us that we must have the appropriate boundary conditions. So meaning that to be not simply self-adjoint, but as people say, truly self-adjoint, L and L dagger, that will be the same, must act on the space of functions that satisfy the appropriate boundary conditions. Namely, that this function Q must disappear on the boundaries. Yeah, question, Yaroslav.
Is it L dagger defined by the star equation defined uniquely? Because in the definition, there is the Q, and it's not clear to me whether the L dagger is defined uniquely.
It's a good question. Yeah, it's quite a good question. Well, in practice, what you should do, you should use the start from expression that is written on the left-hand side and do the integration by parts.
Right.
By parts, whether you will get something unique or something maybe absorbed, say, in Q, well, for me, it is not clear, to be honest. Yeah, it may depend a lot on what functions P0, P1, and so forth you have. Yeah, for me, it's not obvious to you. Yeah.
Thank you.
But we are typically interested, and what is interesting in physics is that the situation where operator L is self-adjoint. In this case, of course, so L dagger will be unique. So what we do now, we consider a relatively simple case in which we have the differential operator that contains the derivative up to the second order with respect to x, namely the so-called Sturm-Liouville problem. Just if you have any questions, just to tell me from your side and I will try to answer. So Sturm-Liouville problem. So if we have operator L equal to p0 d2 dx squared plus p1 d over dx plus p2, then we can ask a question. Is this operator self-adjoint, and under which circumstances it is going to be self-adjoint? So one can show, and in a minute I will demonstrate this, that this operator is self-adjoint. L is self-adjoint if and only if P naught prime, well, by prime I mean the differentiation with respect to x. It is a function only of one variable. P naught prime equal to P1. And L can be written. So and L can be written in the form d over dx p naught d over dx plus p2. So this is the self-adjoint Sturm-Liouville operator. It is important that it is self-adjoint. Yeah.
This, that statement saying that it's self-adjoint is only if p naught dash equals p1, and if that's true, we can also
yeah.
That.
Yeah. 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 So this is self-adjoint. With respect to the wave function, the weight function, with respect to omega of x, w of x equal to 1. So in fact, if this relation doesn't hold, then one still can construct self-adjoint operator, but in this case, w of x will not be equal to 1. To be honest, it is always convenient to work with the weight function that is equal to 1. This considerably simplifies the boundary conditions. So what I will do now some algebra to illustrate self-adjointness and establish what boundary conditions will make this operator truly self-adjoint. Not simply self-adjoint, but truly self-adjoint, namely self-adjoint operator supplemented by the appropriate boundary conditions. So let's write the following. So any questions? So let's write the following. So weight function is equal to 1, and we have u, comma, l. So, okay, let's... So I didn't write this. Let's start from those integrals. So integral a, b, from a to b, u star l v, the x minus integral between a and b, v l dagger u star, the x equal to. If we substitute this operator, we are going to have the integral between a and b, u star d over dx, well, p naught d over dx, acting on v plus p to V dx minus integral between A and B over dx A naught over dx. Right? Plus P2 U star. So this is the expression multiplied by V dx. And what we do, we just integrate by parts. We just integrate by parts here and integrate by parts here. So as a result, we are going to get, as a result of integrating by parts, we're going to get the integral between A and B. So d over dx u star p naught v prime. So v prime, this is dv over dx, minus v p naught u star prime dx minus two things that cancel, simply cancel each other, p naught v prime u star prime dx plus, so this comes from integrating by parts this term, and this term p naught u star prime v prime dx comes from integrating by parts this term. So this cancel. And here we have the full differential under the sign of an integral. So we have, as a result, the following. P naught at B, U star B, V prime at B, minus V at B, U star prime at B, minus P naught on A, so the same expression, U star at A, V prime at A, minus V at A, so U prime star at A. So, and this is what should be exactly equal to zero. To have self-adjoint boundary conditions. So doing this algebra, we explicitly demonstrated that this operator L written above is self-adjoint and derived the conditions for the appropriate boundary conditions. So this will give us the following. U star prime of A divided by U star at A equal to V prime at A divided by V at A. So this follows from this part, and the same can be written at B. U prime star at B divided by U star at B equal to V prime at B divided by V at B.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Are you making a claim that that thing there is always zero, or are you saying we require it to be zero and we're going to use that to get conditions on U and V?
So we impose the conditions on U and V. So since U and V is an arbitrary function, then we assume that the operator will be acting only on those functions that satisfies those conditions. So, and we will be finding Green's functions only assuming that L acts on the functions satisfying those conditions. So basically, because A and B are arbitrary, so U and V are arbitrary functions, then each of those equalities must be equal to some constant, to some real constant. And as a consequence of these equations, typically the boundary conditions are written in the following form. Okay, here we go. So it follows from this that we have alpha A y of A plus beta A y prime of A equal to 0 and alpha B y at B plus beta B y prime at B equal to 0. So this is the same form of those equations when we take U and V and substitute instead of them Y. Alpha and beta, they are just the some real constants. Any questions? So this set of conditions is called homogeneous boundary conditions. Does anyone know why those conditions are called homogeneous? The right hand side is it? There is, yes, the right hand side is equal to 0, but there is something that is more important.
So the
order of the two terms
the
same.
The order of the two terms the same. Actually, the reason is as follows. If we look at those conditions, then y can be multiplied by a constant, and the conditions will remain the same. So this is essentially the essence of homogeneity. In differential equations, integral equations, if we have non-zeros here, then if we multiply by a constant, the conditions won't be the same. So that's why they're called homogeneous boundary conditions.
Mm-hmm. How did you go from these to the new equations again?
So how I went from this to here. So we require that L acts on functions that render this expression zero. And because U and V are arbitrary, then we, treating this differential operator, restrict ourselves to functions that, if plugged instead of U and V, will give us also zero. Mm-hmm.
So can I just check? That you haven't actually shown that L is self-adjoint. You've assumed that, and then you've shown that if you assume this, you get these equations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So this sums up.
So good. After those preliminaries, we're now ready to construct the Green's functions. We will assume this form, Sturm-Liouville form of the differential operator. And write down the specific the steps that allow us to construct the Green's functions. So how to construct G as a function of x and psi for a self-adjoint L. Or a self-adjoint L. So we know the equation L acting on variable x. Here I write explicitly that L acts only on x and psi is a parameter equal to zero. Away from x equal to psi. Basically, what we have the segment. And the space between A and B and point psi somewhere. So not in this point, but away from it, we have this equation for the Green functions. Psi enters as a parameter. So since we have the second order differential equation, then we should write down the solution to the left of xi and to the right of xi. Step one, for x smaller than xi, we construct the solution in the following form. G smaller, I emphasize that we are living here to the left of xi, G smaller equal to A of xi, y1 of x plus b of xi, y2 of x. Right? And similar on the second step for x greater than xi. We have g greater x comma xi equal to c of xi, y1 of x, y1 with the capital Y. Plus d of xi, y2 of x. This is the general solution of the differential equation involving the second derivative. You, from the theory of differential equation, we know that you can always write down the solution. Yeah. And xi, we imagine that xi enters only parametrically. Now we must have that the Green function satisfies the boundary conditions. Namely, those boundary conditions. We substitute A and B instead of X into those formulas. And we will have two equations that will give us the relations between two out of four those constants. So we have alpha A, G smaller, A comma xi, plus beta A, G smaller prime, A of xi equal to 0, and alpha B, G greater of B, xi plus beta B, G prime greater, B of xi equal to 0. So this allows to eliminate either A or B, or C or D. So we are left with only two unknown constants that we're going to determine on the next steps. Step five. So suppose we know all those solutions. So, and we wrote down the equations that allow us to determine either A or B and C and D. The next condition is that what happens at xi? At xi, the Green's function is continuous. Namely, at x equal to xi, we have the condition that g greater of xi equal to g smaller of xi comma xi. It must be continuous because this follows from the fact that if we integrate this equation with the delta function standing in the right-hand side, then we will see that this must be continuous. From the other side, the first derivative must undergo a jump. The first derivative with respect to x at point x equal to xi. So thus, let me move. Condition six, give us at x equal to xi, g prime greater xi minus g smaller prime xi must be equal to something. It must be equal to some constant that can be obtained if we integrate integrate the equation, the over the x p naught, the over the x g x psi plus p2 g x psi equal to delta x minus psi. If we integrate this between a and b, we immediately see what the right-hand side of this formula should be. It should be equal to 1 divided by p naught of psi. But between psi minus 0 and psi plus 0. So we integrate around this point. The interval of integration is infinitesimal. So this integration allows us to understand that the jump should be equal to 1 over p naught taken at psi. Is this clear? Why? So the conditions 5 and 6 allow us to determine the remaining two constants. So all constants are now determined. From these four conditions, and we can write down the general solution. Y of x equal to the integral between a and b, g of x psi, f psi d psi, equal to y1 of x, the integral between x and b, a of psi f psi d psi, plus y2 of x, integral from x to be b of psi f psi d psi plus y1 of x, integral between a and x this time, c of psi f psi d psi plus y2 of x, integral between a and x d of psi f psi d psi. So the first two terms come from between x and b. So 1 second, x smaller than psi. Did I put the limit correctly? Let me check. So the first two terms involve a and b, therefore 4x smaller than psi. No, I'm wrong. So this is between a and x, and these are between one second x smaller than X. So we integrate over xi, right? Let me just say we integrate over xi. So one xi.
Left hand side for psi for x less than psi, which is the same as saying psi must be greater than x, which seems so you should go from x to b. Right?
Actually, I'm right. So when we for x smaller than xi, xi goes between x and b. Right. Because we're integrating over xi.
You've got like eight constant terms defined here. You've got your a, b, c, d, and e.
Yeah, parameterized functions.
But you've also got to get like your y1n, y2s. Are we guaranteed to be able to get all that information out of the four conditions you've given?
Well, for given those boundary conditions, right, but I will mention later. So about the so-called Fredholm alternative that tells us when we should have the unique solution.
Okay. Sure.
So during the tutorial tomorrow, you will have two problems allowing you to practice with finding this green function. You're using this procedure, and you will have one problem that will allow you to understand that if this procedure gives you sensible solutions, then it is unique. So, okay, let me make two important comments. Yeah, note one. So we have constructed the solution of LYS equal to F. So for homogeneous boundary conditions. Then we can ask a question, what if the boundary conditions are inhomogeneous? What if the boundary conditions BC are inhomogeneous? For example, y of a equal to a and y of b equal to b. How to proceed in this case? In this case, we can also write down the solution. If we look at this solution, then we have that if we plug x equal to a or x equal to b, so there, then we have that we satisfied the homogeneous boundary conditions. So in order to write down the general solution for the problem when the boundary conditions are inhomogeneous, we should construct the solution L acting on some function yH equal to 0 that satisfies those boundary conditions. Construct y of h of x such that L acting on yh equal to 0 and yh of a equal to a and yh of b equal to b. And the general solution will be in the form y of x equal to y, so ys of x. So basically ys is this one, x plus yh of x. So this part satisfies the homogeneous boundary conditions, merely zero, and this part satisfies the inhomogeneous boundary conditions from here. In this case, people say that the differential operator has the central mode, non-zero central mode. Basically, this homogeneous differential equation has non-trivial solution. In this case, we say that this operator has central modes, so the central mode for those non-homogeneous boundary conditions. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. So YS needs to satisfy the homogeneous boundary condition, right?
Yeah, well, YS satisfies the homogeneous boundary conditions, exactly.
Here it's just zero.
Hmm?
Here YS is just zero on the...
So for homogeneous boundary conditions,
yeah.
For homogeneous boundary conditions, it is possible to show that this solution has the only, so sorry, this equation has the only solution equal to zero. This is what you will be invited to do during tomorrow's tutorial.
It's the same thing with like second order ODEs where you take the like a particular solution and a specific solution.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. In general, the general statement says that the general solution to the inhomogeneous differential equation is a sum of the general solution of homogeneous differential equation and a specific or particular solution of the inhomogeneous. So if we have those homogeneous boundary conditions, then the solution to the homogeneous differential equation is always zero, and we are left with the specific solution to the inhomogeneous differential equation that is constructed through Green function.
So in this sense, if we're using just the second order differential operator, we're somehow finding the wrong skin, but we're not like explicitly doing it. It's the same thing as what we do with find the wrong skin and then.
Yeah, absolutely. So think that this, you can have the differential operators of higher orders. And you can do the same things and calculate the wrong scans and then show that wrong scan is independent of x. It will give you the constant. This is what you do. So you can do the same also for higher order differential operators. So simply, this procedure is valid for the second order differential operator. That is more or less practical because if you have higher order differential operators, then the calculation of the Green functions becomes much more cumbersome. And moreover, the boundary conditions become much more complicated. Okay, so this was note one. Now, note two. And this is very interesting. No two. Fredholm. Alternative. Question. Does solution to Ly equal to F exist? And if it does, is it unique? So the answer to this question is given by the so-called Fredholm alternative that I'm going to write down explicitly and then comment about the ingredients that enter this alternative. So suppose L is a differential operator say nth order supplemented by n homogeneous boundary conditions. Then either then the Fredholm alternative states that either Ly equal to F has a unique solution or so 2 Ly equal to 0 has n linearly independent or Ly equal to 0 has a non-trivial solution. Then, two, if Ly equal to 0 has n linearly independent solutions, then so does L dagger acting on Y equal to 0. Basically, the second statement tells us that if the original differential operator has n linearly independent solutions, then the adjoint differential operator also has n independent solutions. Yeah.
The other alternative is that it has more than one, right? So I mean, so there's no chance that it has no solution.
So and the third point states that if alternative two holds, then Ly equal to F has no solution unless F is, this right-hand side F is orthogonal to all solutions of this equation. Unless, unless F is orthogonal to all solutions, to all solutions of Ly equal to zero. In other words, basically we must have that integral from A to B of F of X, Y of X equal to zero. Very better to say if we point, if we write the letter H, meaning homogeneous, the solution of the homogeneous differential equation, then F of X integrated with Y H of X must be equal to zero. In other words, if we somehow find the non-trivial solution to this differential equation satisfying homogeneous boundary conditions. Of course, if we look at those conditions, and assume, say, that either all alphas or all betas are equal to zero, then for this operator, if we solve this homogeneous equation, the only solution will be equal to zero. But we can have, say, the combination of alphas and beta given in such a way that we still can find the non-trivial solution satisfying the boundary conditions of this homogeneous differential equations. In this case, the alternative two holds, and the non-uniform equation has a solution only if F is orthogonal to the solution of the homogeneous differential equations. It is very essential that the boundary conditions must be homogeneous. So Fredholm alternative holds only for homogeneous boundary conditions. If you make a Google search of Fredholm alternative for differential equations, then you will find quite many questions that people ask. Why I get something that, according to them, violates Fredholm alternative. So it is really important that all boundary conditions are homogeneous. If the differential operator is the nth order differential operator, then the boundary conditions are likely to be much more complicated. And there will be more boundary conditions, but it is important that all of them are homogeneous. For non-homogeneous boundary conditions, this Fredholm alternative does not work. So it is important because what we considered in note one addresses the issue of non-homogeneous boundary conditions.
So sorry, can I just like go back to something I understand properly? With like second, because it's like, you know, you talk about second order linear ODEs, and then you just, you know, do the normal solution with when you get to particular and specific solutions, and sorry, particular and like complementary solutions. And if I find that I get a complementary solution, which is a solution to Ly equals zero, mm-hmm. It's a polynomial, and you're saying, so I mean, I definitely remember that if I stuck to that as like, you know, Ly equals this YH, mm-hmm. I could find a solution, but I couldn't find a solution which has some homogeneous species, what you're saying.
Yeah, so of course, if you look at the homogeneous equation, then of course it always has the solution with some constants.
Right.
With some constants. But the question will be, will those constants arise as non-zero constants if you try to satisfy the boundary conditions? If they are zero, then the only solution to this is a trivial solution.
Thanks.
And you can proceed with finding the solution to a non-homogeneous equation using the Green functions technique. So, okay, and I have five, 10 more minutes to tell you last thing I would like to tell you today. This thing is called eigenfunctions expansion. Eigenfunctions expansion. You may wonder why is it so pleasant to work with self-adjoint differential operators. Well, in physics, of course, we deal with Hermitian operators in linear algebra. So, and they describe real life, real physics. So we can also imagine that self-adjoint operators are much more practical in real physics than non-self-adjoint. And you may wonder why I spend so much time talking about self-adjoint differential operators. And the point is that self-adjoint operators, they possess the complete set of orthonormal eigenfunctions. So apparently, Daniel taught you the course devoted to special functions, and he talked about this, right? Right. So self-adjoint operators L possess a complete set of orthonormal eigenfunctions. So we have the following: L acting on those functions phi n equal to lambda n phi n of x. And we have the condition of orthonormality. Well, so suppose we have the weight W equal to 0, phi m of x, actually star phi n of x, the x equal to delta n m. The condition of orthonormality. And what is equally important, there is the condition of completeness. Namely, if we sum over the index that labels the eigenstates, sum over n of phi n x phi n star psi, this will give us what? Delta function. Again, delta function, and we can use this property to construct the representation of Green's functions using the expansion over the orthonormal set. We write that g is a function of x psi equal to the sum over n phi n of x phi n of star psi divided by lambda n. Well, typically we deal with real differential operators, so its eigenfunctions can be always chosen to be real. So any questions? So the Green function is given by this sum. So to prove this, we just simply act proof. Let's act L acting on variable x sum over n phi n of x phi n star of xi divided by lambda n equal to sum lx phi n of x times phi n star of xi divided by lambda n. And this gives us just lambda n, and we have sum over n of x times phi n star of xi. And this will be just the delta function. So the equation that the Green's function must satisfy fulfills. This method of calculating Green's function may be more convenient, but may be less convenient, because eventually you see you have to sum the series. Basically, you have the series, you have to sum. But the result must be the same. So this procedure I described earlier is probably more convenient. But you can use also this procedure, and it should give you the same result. Any questions?
So can you tell us, I mean, I heard, so when you've been kind of getting close to is talking about the kernel of L.
Uh-huh.
And I know that if you want to talk about the Fredholm index, you better talk about its co-kernel as well.
Kernel of what? Integral
the co-kernel of L. Kernel
of L.
Yeah, do you know what that is?
What kernel are you talking about?
Sorry, like I know you have the kernel of L, which is the set of all functions ascends to zero. I know you can also define something called a co-kernel on L, and then Fredholm, you've got the Fredholm index, which is the dimension of the kernel minus the dimension of the co-kernel.
Wait, this is what I did.
This is included. So you don't have to introduce the kernel.
Yeah, but what is the co-kernel?
The co-kernel, isn't the co-kernel the kernel of the joint?
Yeah, well, it's the target space on the image.
Yeah, so it's probably the...
What you're saying is
it's the kernel of
Helicon,
right?
You know, this isn't really like high level. Like it's
this is like the lowest.
You don't need Fredholm theory to do any of this. I wouldn't worry about that, Tom.
But it's still a consequence.
Okay.
If there are no questions, then we'll probably stop here. That's because this is all. So during tomorrow's tutorial, you will have two problems devoted to the calculation of Green functions for some simple differential operators. Yeah. And tomorrow I will be talking about Fourier transforms and causal Green functions. Okay.
Are you posting the notes?
Yeah, we'll do this.